The Pat Kenny Show
with Aviva Insurance
on News Talk.
We'll talk politics in a moment domestically, but first, a curiosity from the past, but a very relevant one. As Donald Trump prepares to announce a raft of new tariffs tomorrow for his so-called Liberation Day, former US Republican presidents were not as keen on the measure as Trump seems to be. Ronald Reagan, in an address from Camp David on the 25th of April 1987, announced duties on Japan for failing to enforce its trade agreement with the US on semiconductors. But imposing a tariff was not something he was fond of, as he explained.
Now, imposing such tariffs or trade barriers and restrictions of any kind are steps that I am loath to take. And in a moment I'll mention the sound economic reasons for this. That over the long run, such trade barriers hurt every American worker and consumer. But the Japanese semiconductors were a special case. We had clear evidence that Japanese companies were engaging in unfair trade practices that violated an agreement between Japan and the United States. We expect our trading partners to live up to their agreements. As I've often said, our commitment to free trade is also a commitment to fair trade. But you know, in imposing these tariffs, we were just trying to deal with a particular problem, not begin a trade war. So next week, I'll be giving Prime Minister Nakasone this same message. We want to continue to work cooperatively on trade problems and want very much to lift these trade restrictions as soon as evidence permits. Indeed, throughout the world, there's a growing realization that the way to prosperity for all nations is rejecting protectionist legislation and promoting fair and free competition. Now, there are sound historical reasons for this. For those of us who lived through the Great Depression, the memory of the suffering it caused is deep and searing. And today, many economic analysts and historians argue that high tariff legislation passed back in that period, called the Smoot-Hawley Tariff, greatly deepened the Depression and prevented economic recovery. You see, at first, when someone says, let's impose tariffs on foreign imports, it looks like they're doing the patriotic thing by protecting American products and jobs. And sometimes for a short while it works, but only for a short time. What eventually occurs is, first, homegrown industries start relying on government protection in the form of high tariffs. They stop competing and stop making the innovative management and technological changes they need to succeed in world markets. And then, while all this is going on, something even worse occurs. High tariffs inevitably lead to retaliation by foreign countries and the triggering of fierce trade wars. The result is more and more tariffs, higher and higher trade barriers, and less competition. So soon, because of the prices made artificially high by tariffs that subsidize inefficiency and poor management, people stop buying. Then the worst happens. Markets shrink and collapse, businesses and industries shut down, and millions of people lose their jobs. The memory of all this occurring back in the 30s made me determined when I came to Washington to spare the American people the protectionist legislation that destroys prosperity. Now, it hasn't always been easy. There are those in the Congress, just as there were back in the 30s, who want to go for the quick political advantage, who risk America's prosperity for the sake of a short-term appeal to some special interest group, who forget that more than 5 million American jobs are directly tied to the foreign export business, and additional millions are tied to imports. Well, I've never forgotten those jobs, and on trade issues, by and large, we've done well. In certain select cases, like the Japanese semiconductors, we've taken steps to stop unfair practices against American products, but we've still maintained our basic long-term commitment to free trade and economic growth. Remember, America's jobs and growth are at stake.
Are you listening, Donald? Well, the answer clearly is no, and he would be aware of the attitude of Ronald Reagan and Reaganomics and all of that, but he is determined to go ahead tomorrow, Liberation Day. That was Ronald Reagan speaking back on the 25th of April in 1987. Well, now, the Crown Corda, Verona Murphy, faces a motion of confidence in the Dáil today. Barry Heenan has asked for a seat swap to get away from Michael Lowry. And, of course, the tariffs aforementioned will be on today's agenda. I'm joined in studio by Fionnán Sheehan, Ireland editor with the Irish Independent. Fionnán, good morning.
Pat, Liberation Day and Judgment Day all rolled into one. By the way, Reagan rounds off all that. He does a great analogy at the end. He says, we're in the same boat with our trading partners. If one partner shoots a hole in the boat, does it make sense for the other one to shoot another hole in the boat? Some say yes and call that getting tough. Well, I call it stupid.
Great.
So...
absolutely. I mean,
seems to be lost on Donald Trump.
Lost on Donald Trump.
And it's a reflection as well of how, if you went to the Republican Party 5-10 years back, they would have said Reaganomics was a core principle of theirs, and that's all gone out the window now.
Yeah. Yesterday, I suggested that the people in his cabinet, the people around him and surrounding him, are too stupid to know how stupid they are.
Yeah, and I suppose it is the issue as well, is that he has appointed people who are there to agree with him, not to disagree with him, not to in any way challenge his doctrine, and that's why you've
so
got
it's
him
one echo chamber.
Like
the whole thing is an
yeah.
Echo
you saw that in the text messages last week where they were talking about the strikes in Yemen, and J.D. Vance was putting forward an opposing view. And the rest of the people in the conversation was, oh, no, this is what the president says, so this is what we're doing. And Vance says, oh, yeah, I know, I'll be saying that publicly. So there's no dissenting voices here whatsoever.
Yeah, and the whole attitude when Vance was saying, this is not what the president, blah, 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 you know, tell the president he's wrong. Good luck with that.
Yeah. Not happening.
Anyway, Verona Murphy, she will survive this challenge today, but at what cost?
Yeah, so this will kick off this evening. So Verona Murphy will obviously be in the chair this afternoon, and then at around about 5 o'clock, we'll have a debate. Now, the government will put forward a counter motion, a motion of confidence. And
now, what will happen to her in the meantime? Does she step aside and the last Count Corliss steps in to handle it?
The Dáil still has confidence in her until they don't have confidence in her. So you'd imagine she will step aside for the motion itself, and the last Count Corliss, John McGuinness, will step in. There is a possibility, of course, that she can address that motion. I don't see how that would help the situation, really, because she would just be, in effect, attacking the very opposition parties who she says she is a fair referee to. So she might just leave that up to the government. And as well as that, events have kicked in here as well. The fact that we are on the brink of a trade war will give the government prime opportunity to basically say, this is Nero fiddling, lads. Rome is burning. The barbarians are at the gates.
I had literally written on my script here, Nero fiddling, as you said it.
A cithara, as he was. So I wonder, will somebody bring one into the Dáil to display it to the opposition parties? But that will be the tenor of it here. The opposition aren't interested in government and world affairs, and this is the kind of game plan that they get on with. The opposition will say, look, this is the very reason why we need strong opposition, because you need to have people challenging the government.
This did all start with a stroke, though.
It did. I mean,
they selected a woman who didn't have the first official language to chair a debate in Dáil Éireann at any point, which could burst into Erse, into Irish, and she wouldn't understand what the hell was going on.
Yeah, and also you would say the pertinent issue here was the lack of experience. You had a second term TD becoming Ceann Comhairle, and there is a reason why over the years you've put experienced people into that chair. They tend to have good relationships across the political divide, have worked with people on various committees and so on over the years. People have a general sense of them, and they are also familiar with the operation of the Dáil, and that doesn't tend to be the case when you're that early into your political career. So that's the core criticism that you would have, that you're after putting somebody in here not necessarily with the requisite standing and experience in the Dáil, and it's blown up straight away. We expected to hit this point, I think, at some point. It was quite obvious. Verona Murphy was being put into that job as part of the government's deal with the Lowry independence. So therefore, that was going to come back and bite them. I don't think anybody expected it would happen this fast, though. So she'll comfortably win. On current maths, you'll be looking at about a 20-vote majority in her favour. This will flush out all the other independents to see what everybody else come out, apart from the five opposition parties who are tabling the motion. So there'll be some interest in that regard. But she survives very comfortably here. Does that draw a line under it? Not really. There'll be a row over the committees then. There'll be ongoing challenges to her authority as time goes on.
Okay, but it's a long time. 5 years, it's a long term. So she may rehabilitate herself in their affections
in
due time.
Ultimately, she can turn around and say, look, I have a mandate here. I was elected. There was then a motion of confidence put forward in me, and I passed that.
But do you remember at the very beginning, and I was one of the ones saying that she should absolutely recuse herself from the job because she was talking about her influence getting to talk to cabinet ministers on local radio.
This was very strange.
It was unacceptable as far as I was concerned.
So there's a couple of own goals here on Rona Murphy's part. She is the one who stood up in the Dáil and thanked Michael Lowry profusely for coming up with this whole plan. She was the one who was saying on local radio that she would still be serving the people of Wexford, no bother at all. And in fact, she'd have more influence because she would be able to speak to ministers and effectively use the position that she occupied. So that will also be monitored closely over the coming years if she is claiming credit on a local level for any measures.
Staying with this particular issue and a side issue, moving seats to distance oneself from Michael Lowry.
Yeah, moving the deck chair. One would say, let's draw another analogy. Pat, I'm looking at my pocket here. What have I got? 20 quid. I'm going to go over to Paddy Powers and put down money on first TD to go overboard on the coalition, Barry Heenan, and see what odds I will get. So Barry Heenan, if anybody wants to go into Paul Murphy's Twitter or X account, look at the video taken last Tuesday where Michael Lowry offered Paul Murphy two tickets to the league final down in Croke Park with his two fingers, or Parky Cuí with his two fingers. And beside him, you will see another TD, Barry Heenan, waving not in an insulting manner, waving cheerily at Paul Murphy as the Dáil burst into chaos. And Barry Heenan, first time independent TD from Dublin Bay North, has now told the Taoiseach that he wants to move seats away from Michael Lowry. And why? Because he was subjected to a lot of opprobrium over the course of the last week because of his association with Michael Lowry. So he'll move seats, but he'll continue to support the government and he wants his local constituency matters delivered on. But he has basically put the message out there now that he is sensitive to criticism, which is not the brightest of idea for somebody who's going to be in a coalition that is going to face tough decisions over the coming few years. So rather than, you know, quietly sitting there and just getting on with his job, Barry Heenan has decided that he wants to make a bit of a name for himself in the Dáil. Stark contrast to Gillian Toole, also a first-time TD. We don't hear from her, we don't see her courting publicity and anything like that. She's just getting on with her job and also seeking to deliver for her constituents in Mead East. So the fact that he has basically said, if somebody comes after me, I'll respond to it. It basically has put a target on him. And you'd imagine if you're the opposition parties, you're going to be looking very closely at what's happening in his constituency over the course of the coming years.
Now, there will be some serious business. Justice Minister Jim O'Callaghan is going to bring legislation of Valerie's Law to Cabinet. Just remind us what that will mean.
Yeah, so this is Valerie's Law is in memory of Valerie French, and she was a mother of three, and she was only 41 when she was murdered by her husband, James Kilroy. Now, the law that's been brought into effect there will mean that parents who are convicted of killing their spouses will be most likely to lose guardianship of their shared children. So this has been campaigned for by Valerie's family over the past number of years, and Jim O'Callaghan will bring forward legislation that will make it more likely than not that guardianship will not be passed to a parent because they have killed.
Well, a life in prison sentence means that you're not going to be around to guardian your children anyway.
It shouldn't be, but the justice system is quite curious. You could end up with a manslaughter charge. You could end up with a reduced sentence. You could end up with somebody being out after a limited enough time period where the children could still be under adult age, so therefore it does and would come into play.
Will this law impact on the property rights, or has that already been sorted? You know, when you kill your wife or your husband, and you end up, because you both own the house, you end up as the sole owner of the house.
This one seems to be directed solely at the issue of guardianship and parenthood, and who exactly has the rights to raise the children in circumstances such as these.
Yeah, because if you think of someone takes out an insurance policy, kills the other party and benefits, that would be an obscenity.
Yeah, this would appear to look solely at kind of the strict family law aspects around the children as opposed to property rights, which is a separate matter.
Now, it looks as if our energy bills are not going to rise as we suspected they might.
Yes, you've a mixed bag going on here now, and there's kind of conflicting reports coming forward from government here. Basically, government are saying that the cost of living measures that were brought in over successive budgets are not going to continue, but some will, not the universal payments, but otherwise there will be alleviating measures. So Pascal Donoghue is going to extend the lower VAT rates on utility bills, gas and electricity for 6 months. That will bring it up to the budget. At that point, it'll be kicked on again. It'll remain at 9.5%. And that's in order to alleviate bills. Likewise, he's looking at the property tax issue. Everybody's property tax issue is due to go up from November onwards, whether people realise this or not, because such has been the increase in property values over the course.
Everyone's going to move up a band.
Everybody's going to go up because it last assessed Halloween of 2021. So therefore, within those 4 years, your property price have probably gone up by around about a quarter. So therefore, everybody's expected to go up. But Pascal Donoghue is going to jiggle the system a wee bit such that you will adjust the bands and you will ensure that most people won't go up. There might be a minor increase, but not the dramatic one that you would expect where you will jump a range of bands. That's easily done. All you have to do is widen the threshold on the bands. And then a third issue that's coming into play here is a reduction that was brought in on college, what we call college fees, what traditionally is called the college registration fees, which used to be 150 quid back in the day, which is now up to €3,000. That's been alleviated in recent years, been reduced down to €2,000, not affecting people on grants who would have the full bill covered. But James Lawless, the higher education minister, is basically signalling that kind of one-off measure is not going to continue indefinitely. So if you're not on a grant and if you're not entitled to any alleviation on those fees, it is likely to start going back up to €3,000 for you or in this year's budget.
Now, in the middle of all of this, are they going to get a chance to talk about Liberation Day at all?
Yeah,
and the tariffs and all the rest of it?
This is what you'd wonder about. These matters are of, you know, for whether Verona Murphy chairs the Dáil or not is of little enough consequence compared to what is coming down the track here, potentially something that wipes out half the exports from our pharmaceutical sector, potentially something that endangers a lot of jobs in the food and drink sector. So Cabinet will be discussing that this morning. They will be updating each other on talks that the Taoiseach and the Taoiseach are having with European partners and setting out what's the general strategy and what's the view from a European perspective. But they will also be very mindful that sometime today we're going to get an indication of what exactly those tariffs are ahead of them due to being coming tomorrow.
Fionnán Sheehan, Ireland editor of the Irish Independent, thank you very much.
The Pat Kenny Show
with Aviva Insurance
on News Talk.